With me in the studio tonight are two notable Cincinnati women, Marion Spencer, a living legend in civil rights causes, and the first African-American woman elected to city council, who later became vice mayor, is here, along with Dorothy Christensen, whose career has been in nonprofit administration. She is a colleague and friend of Marion, and they have worked together on fair housing, Planned Parenthood, and the Charter Committee of Cincinnati. They have also collaborated on what I'm calling a biography, autobiography of Marion's life. It is titled, Keep On Fighting, The Life and Civil Rights Legacy of Marion A. Spencer. And it details the remarkable work on civil rights that Marion has accomplished in her life. It is a privilege and a pleasure to welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Marion, you were born in Gallipolis, Ohio in 1920, along with your twin sister, Mildred, and grew up in what sounds like a strong and loving family and community. I gathered that dinner conversations were lively and informative and far-ranging. However, there is one night when you were about eight that it was a very tense dinner time, and you and the other children were not allowed to go out and play after dinner. So if you would read us a couple of passages from your book that explains why there was this tension.
The night the KKK marched was dark, warm, and moonless. There were no street lights on the unpaved streets north of the railroad track where all the Negroes lived. When it got really dark outside, my father called Mildred and me to come outside onto the balcony above the front door of the family store. Grandfather Henry and my brother Harry were downstairs with the lights out in the closed store. The only light came from the KKK's torches that the members held high as they marched right down Third Avenue toward our store and home. They wore white costumes with high cone hats, and their faces were covered with white masks. They shouted, and I was scared. I wanted to run back inside. My dad said to stay. He wanted us to see what the Klansmen were doing. He felt that if we understood the KKK's purpose was to intimidate us, we would learn not to be afraid. Daddy said they covered their faces because they knew what they were doing was wrong. All the neighbors had to be on guard when the KKK came because sometimes they would turn on a house and try to burn it down. We always had a shotgun behind every door downstairs in the store and in the kitchen. My dad kept a loaded revolver in his dresser upstairs. When the marchers got there, my dad pointed to an anonymous man with a limp in the middle of the group. See that man? That's Jake Livesey, who sells you penny candy on his store across the in his store across the street from your school. The KKK marched on by, but Grandfather Henry and my brother Harry had been on guard downstairs. Sometimes we still bought penny candy after school, but we didn't talk to Mr. Livesey like we did before that march.
Such a memorable event in your life. I'm thinking about how you went on to accomplish so many things. I'm just going to name a few of them. You fought for integration at Coney Island. You were the first African-American woman elected to Cincinnati City Council, went on to be vice mayor. You're a life member of the NAACP and the first woman president of a local chapter. You were instrumental in the creation of HOME, which is the Housing Opportunities Made Equal agency. So I want to ask you about how this early experience, not only of the Klan, but of your family's reaction to it, shaped you. Do you remember the aftermath of it, the conversations around the dinner table after you watched this Klan march?
We were very young when that happened. We were in school. All we knew was that we did not have to be afraid. And that was important to us all through our lives. Even when I came to Cincinnati, I thought, well, what's going to happen there? I faced the things that I met here, and I was not afraid because I thought I could speak up and out against them. Around our dinner table, we talked about everything. We had all black first 8 grades of our schooling, one white teacher in the first and second grades who taught us how to read. And we wanted to read every book in the library. We had conversations that dealt with what we might meet in the street and how we could respond to it, and did it all our lives, and were never really afraid to speak up, no matter where we were or what we did.
You know, I just heard a well-known African-American actress say that the only thing that separates women of color from anyone else is opportunity. So would you say that that has kind of been the foundation for what you've fought for all your life? Was that a guiding principle for you?
Grandfather was a freed slave. He had come up and had been taken with a sister who was also a daughter of his slave master. They had been taken into the big house, as they called it, and taught to read. He had half-brothers who had not been, and he tried very hard to help them. In fact, I was fortunate enough to get a copy of an interview between Uncle Jim and a young lady from New York City. And Grandfather said he wanted them to know how. And this one brother said it was the hardest thing he ever did in his life, learn to read. But they were fortunate enough to know. And he was able to run his store and to be a businessman and highly respected in Gallipolis.
So he took advantage of that opportunity.
He took advantage of that opportunity.
And I do want to let listeners know that a copy of that interview that was done through the Writers Project under the WPA with your relative, who was a former slave, is included in the book. It's fascinating.
The Underground Railroad were able to trace it, and I was pleased to have it.
Yes, absolutely. Dot, I want to ask you about how this book came about. And I introduced it as a biography, autobiography. Tell us how it's structured also.
It is a biography, I think, but it's structured with me putting some context around the many, many stories that Marian had. And it all started because one day I was sitting on her couch and she told me a story about her grandfather. And I said, you must write this down, at least for your family. You must write your stories down. And she said, I don't know how to do that. And I don't know if I will take the time to do that. Then we went on and agreed that if she would give the time, I would record her interviews and then I would put them together as a book for her family. And so we did that and we gave her family, we only printed 25 copies locally, and she gave them to family members and close friends for Christmas that year. And then I sent it to Ohio University Press because the Spencers have a long history there. Don Spencer was on the board of trustees there.
Miriam's husband.
Miriam's husband, yes. And they said, well, it's not yet a book for general publication. It needs a lot more context around what was happening. What was happening in Cincinnati when Marian first came to town. One of the striking things to me was it was in 1948 that Marian integrated the YWCA downtown, which was 20 years before there was any civil rights activity at all. She integrated the YWCA swimming pools and summer camps nationally by 1950, before 1952, which was Coney Island. So she was a real pioneer in that. But we met for 16 weeks. And I recorded interviews, and then each week I would bring back the typed-up interviews, and she would correct it, and then I'd interview her again. And that's how the book came about.
Must have been wonderful.
It's a great privilege.
I would think so.
My younger son, Edward, who didn't come back home much after going to college, said to me once, Mother, I wish you'd tell me what you've been doing ever since I've been gone. He lives on the West Coast. And then I thought, well, then maybe I do need to put this down for their sake. Not necessarily mine. It was always in my head.
Well, I think one of the things that Marian says at the end of the book is that she wanted to write it down so that her grandsons would know that a lot of progress has been made. There's still a lot of work to be done, but we have made a lot of progress. And she felt that her story helped tell how that happened.
Exactly. That's one of the things I was interested in asking you. When you look back over your life, where do you think there's been the most progress? I mean, do you see specific areas of racial relationships that have moved on?
Well, there have been actually changes in the laws, and the people, according to who comes into office, changes in the actions. Wherever we are, but there is much to be done. We seem to go a little backwards as well as forwards, and we have to be alert to the changes so that they are substantive and meaningful and accepted.
Yes. It has, as I said, been a true privilege to talk with both of you tonight. I certainly want to thank you for the tremendous effort and energy you've put into civil rights. I can see why you didn't have time to write your life down, because you were so busy doing. So
still am.
So thanks to Dot for making it happen also. Thanks for being here tonight. Great to visit with you
thank
both.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Marian Spencer and Dorothy Christensen about their book titled Keep On Fighting, The Life and Civil Rights Legacy of Marian A. Spencer. On October 22nd, Marian and Dorothy will be at the African American Cultural and Resource Center at UC from 11:30 to 1:30. You'll find more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.
Woke up this morning.